This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. This is one of those shows where there may be some people dropping in unexpectedly. We are expecting Michael Fabiano, as always. It's Tuesday. It's NFL before week one. A lot of you are going to be doing your fantasy football drafts here in the next week. And Michael Fabiano is here to make sense of all of it. Those of you that drafted in the last 4 weeks and you took Julian Edelman, you're hosed. Those of you that said, you know, I think Matthew Stafford's going to be all right. He's now the top paid player in all of football. And it just so happens the Arizona Cardinals are going to face him in week one. That is really good intrigue. So we are going to get into that. The Dodgers are in town tonight against the Diamondbacks. And while on one hand it's the Dodgers in town, and I should be really interested and excited about this, half of the intrigue and drama is not there. The Dodgers are not going to be throwing Yu Darvish. The Dodgers are not going to be throwing Clayton Kershaw. And Cody Bellinger's on the disabled list, and the Dodgers are just cruising towards the postseason. These two teams are going to be playing each other again in October, in my humble opinion. Here's how it's going to work. The Diamondbacks are going to make it into the wild card. They're going to throw Greinke, and they're going to win the wild card game. Then they're going to match up with the Dodgers, and then the Diamondbacks will likely get just blown over and away, unless you throw Robbie Ray and Patrick Corbin in back-to-back starts, and you're Torey Lovello, and you're starting to look ahead as to how do I line up my staff? How do I line up my rotation? Robbie Ray is throwing tonight. Last start out, really good. First start out coming off of the line drive to the head. So tonight is going to be a good night. Tonight will be great to see the Diamondbacks and Dodgers in the midst of a big, big race for the Diamondbacks side of things. Dodgers, it's all sewed up. They're the best team, and that's the way it is. But you just never know in postseason. You just don't know. So that's on my mind today. I think, though, the bigger story this week in town, and actually in state, is that of our two football coaches on the college end. When we talk about Todd Graham and when we talk about Rich Rodriguez, we have to talk about the athletic directors above them and how both of the athletic directors have to have within their top desk drawer a 3x5 card. On said 3x5 card has to be five names that could be replacements for Todd Graham and Rich Rodriguez, respectively. To think that both coaches are safe, to think that both coaches, as they open their seasons this coming Thursday and Saturday, respectively, are going to be back next year, 100% locked, solid, guaranteed, not a chance. To think that the fan base of both programs, look, I get it with the U of A. I get it. It's Rich Rodriguez. It's a basketball school. He hasn't done much the last couple of years. However, they were in the Fiesta Bowl. They were in a big-time bowl game in the last few years. Arizona State fans, on the other hand, they're happy going to the Las Vegas Bowl, they're happy going to El Paso, and they're happy going to San Diego to the Holiday Bowl. Three bowls that you can make the argument are B and C listers at best when you get to Vegas and El Paso. When I hear the, boy, having six or seven wins this year would be great from Arizona State fans, are you kidding me? And from the U of A fans, what am I hearing? I cannot wait for the start of Raleigh Alkins out on the floor. We're not talking football, we're talking basketball. That's what they care about around the U of A. They don't care what's going on with the football program. The numbers in the stands don't lie. And so when you look at both of these programs, if you break it down and go on the ASU side of things, I'm at the ASU kickoff luncheon 2 weeks ago. Ray Anderson steps to the podium in a span of 2 minutes, talks about how this is the best collective group, the best collective coaches, the best selective setup since the Frank Kush era. He invoked the late coach. He then talked about how Todd Graham is trying to get himself to the next level of his coaching career. If you were to look at Todd Graham's coaching record at Arizona State since they beat Notre Dame, and what it looks like for Arizona State fans against Power 5 programs. Get all these other schools out of the way, but Power 5 programs, you would find a record that was not in the right side of wins and losses. It's not been pretty. If you look at U of A, what did they do to finish last season? They absolutely annihilated their rivals to the north. If you're an Arizona Wildcat fan, you had to love how the U of A just kicked ASU all over the field and ran the ball right down their throats. ASU could not stop them at all. And so that's the last image of what we saw with the Sun Devils trying to turn around a football program on the defensive side that was atrocious. And so, yes, Arizona State is going to say that if we get big play out of JoJo Wicker and Tayshaun Smallwood, then we're going to be great and our secondary is going to be better. And I'm going to say that's two guys. You got a lot of holes on the other side, at other spots within your secondary. If a kid like Byron Murphy, who's going to start in the secondary at Washington and was the best player in the state at Saguaro a couple of years ago, if he had stayed here rather than getting away, ASU would have somebody in their secondary in which to build around. Instead, it's being done with Band-Aids and barbed wire and rubber bands. I mean, they're just kind of sort of trying to put something together back there. On the Arizona side of the street, they've been besieged by injuries, and they've had a lot of players on the defensive side of the football that just haven't worked out, haven't made an impact. But they do have a running attack, much like Arizona State does with Kalen Ballage and DeMario Richard in Tempe. In Tucson, it's a three-headed monster there. They have a quarterback in Brandon Dawkins that they feel very good about. I don't know if Arizona State has the right quarterback. All I know is they have Manny Wilkins, and Blake Barnett is who most fans would like to see be the guy. And as we sit here right now, that hasn't happened. So do you have two or do you not have any? The point is, on all of this, Todd's got to win. And in my opinion, he's got to win eight games. In my opinion. In Tucson, I don't know what it takes on the Rich Rod front. Rich Rod was the guy that flirted with South Carolina. Is it time for both of them and both programs to push reset? As we start the college football season this week, do you feel good about either one of these programs coming out in a big way this year? Should never be settling for, boy, I really hope we get to a bowl game. There's 40 of them. Okay, that's 80 teams. So what do you want to be, 60th best, 70th best? You should be striving to be in the Fiesta Bowl. You should be striving to be in Atlanta. You should be striving to be at these bowl games that are viewed in higher regard than games being played in Vegas or San Francisco. I mean, come on. I'm interested in how the season's going to begin. I'm very interested to see how it's going to play out. I just believe that both coaches are coaching their last year here right now. Personally, I like both guys. They're not going to like me after this, and that's fine. Facts are, I'm tired of this being a mediocre for the most part. University of Arizona Wildcats made a Fiesta Bowl. And when I hear from ASU fans about, well, yeah, they have a big donut hole. The next time they get to Pasadena, it'll be when they buy a ticket and all that stuff. I don't know. The last time you were in a Rose Bowl, Jake Plummer was here. It's been 20 years. 20 years. That shouldn't happen on your end. So neither side is right in all this. Neither side is right. What else? What else? What else? What else? There's a few other things on my mind. I'll get to them as the show progresses. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Michael Fabiano in about 15 minutes. Stay with us. So the Cardinals game against Detroit to open the season, and we don't care at all about Denver this Thursday. It's a waste of jet fuel. The game against Detroit now has taken on a whole new meaning in my eyes. What does it say when an NFL team gives the highest contract ever in the history of the NFL until next week or the week after or next year? It'll just keep going upwards. We're never going to hear the lowest paid contract. Matthew Stafford of the Detroit Lions lands a deal that is $27 million on average, guaranteed $92 million. when you talk about NFL contracts, you always go off the guaranteed and the signing bonus. What are the signing? But what is the signing bonus? What is the guarantee? Not the total number. Total number doesn't mean jack in the NFL. You can cut a guy, and that's the way it goes. It's $27 million on average, guaranteed $92 million. The agent for Matthew Stafford is Tom Condon. If you want to follow the business of sports, you need to know the name Tom Condon if you don't already. He controls Matt Ryan, and he controls Drew Brees, among others, and now Matthew Stafford. You're probably wondering where Tom Brady is at in all this. How is it that Tom Brady is not the highest paid quarterback in the NFL and that Matthew Stafford is? What's interesting is Matthew Stafford should still be throwing to a guy named Megatron, still should be throwing to a guy named Calvin Johnson. And yet, here he is getting this size of a contract. Eric, were you surprised by this yesterday, by the way?
Not really, because the NFL just pays. That's just what the NFL does.
Matthew Stafford?
I agree. It doesn't make the most sense.
Does it roll off the tongue? Matthew Stafford, highest paid NFL quarterback.
With these contracts, Brad, in every single sport, you could probably go through Major League Baseball, the NFL, and NBA and go through the top 10 list, and some of these names would just stick out like a sore thumb. I mean, Matthew Stafford got the Lions to the playoffs. I mean, they're banking that maybe he can get them back there again. But like you said, I mean, there is no Calvin Johnson. But if you're going to
Anquan Boldin, either,
but now, if you're going to pay someone, the quarterback more often than not is going to be the guy that gets paid.
So what does this do to the Cardinals game? I mean, is this a way of they just didn't walk in yesterday morning and agree to this? They agreed to it sometime back, and they said, you know what, from a PR standpoint, let's release it 10 days before the season starts. But
smart that they did that too, because I think now it's a big deal, but when the whistle blows and the Cardinals are playing the Lions, I probably won't think twice. All these athletes make so much money. I couldn't, you know.
But is there more pressure on him now in the first game? He's not going to play in the fourth preseason game.
No.
So you don't think when he runs out on the field to beat Arizona with the label of highest paid NFL quarterback, you don't think that there's any extra pressure on him?
I mean, I think there is, but I don't know Matthew Stafford from the guy walking down the street. So I couldn't tell you how he handles things like that.
But outwardly, I think the perception is going to be, well, Matthew Stafford's just going to go out and tear it up. He can't throw three picks and one touchdown. And,
yeah, he's making more money than Drew Brees. He's making more money than Aaron Rodgers.
No, I think this contract adds a real level of intrigue to the Cardinals season opener, Detroit. As if the season opener doesn't get you more excited enough, you can look at it one of two ways. At least I think so. Here's a guy that is now the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, which means he's got to be the best or one of the best in the league. The Cardinals, there's some questions within the Cardinals in their secondary. Is there not? They can talk about Antoine Bethea. They can talk about how Tyrann Mathieu's played well, and I think he has played well in August fake football.
Justin Bethel taking over the other
quarterback
spot.
We talk all day long about how Justin Bethel's finally figured it out. It looks like it. You know, it's wasting time in August to fill time for guys. And so when it comes to opening game, if Matthew Stafford goes out and shows every last bit of the part of being a guy that is being paid as the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, and he goes and throws four scores and 350 yards against the Cardinals, all of a sudden we're going to be sitting here on Monday saying, oh my gosh, what just happened to the Cardinals?
Probably not, because we're going to be looking at next week's storyline when they go play the Colts and if Andrew Luck's actually going to be on the field.
Right.
Speaking of marquee high-paid quarterbacks.
Sure, but this is not Geno Smith that they're going up against. You know, this is now the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL. And so is there extra incentive for the Cardinals' defense? Outwardly, they're going to just poo-poo all that stuff. But I think the competitive juices for anybody that is really good at their gig, they're only going to take care of their business, but they're going to look across the line. They're going to watch that film and say, that is the highest bleeping paid player at his position in the entire NFL.
Well, you know, Brett,
I'm going to take that as a challenge.
Matthew Stafford faces a lot of the same issues that Carson Palmer does. If you protect him, he will be productive. Did you see the graphic that they put in the Cardinal game? The first half of the season, at how many times Palmer dropped back and was sacked compared to the second half of the season when Palmer was protected and not sacked, night and day. And Matthew Stafford, in a lot of ways, a lot like Carson Palmer, likes to throw the ball downfield, might need that extra second. If he gets it, it could be a long completion. If not, it's probably going to be a sack.
But you're right, because they are similar. I do think you're right in that.
Build, arm strength. But Stafford's a little bit more mobile. He's younger.
Does Carson have better skill talent? I'll talk to Fabiano about this in a second. But does Carson have better skill talent overall than what Matthew Stafford has in Detroit? And the answer on that is yes, without question.
Starting with number 11.
Sure.
The ultimate safety blanket.
Sure. And the guy you turn around, throw the pitch the ball out to, and
he's
stick in the belly.
Either.
He's not bad either. So I you know, is Carson Palmer looking at this like, that's the highest paid guy in the league? Probably not. I don't think that's what motivates Carson Palmer to do his thing. But it is interesting to me now that this has come out, and that this is going to be a backdrop to the league. It's not going to impact the Cardinals. Sometimes these contracts come down, and you look at them and you say, okay, if it's a running back contract that comes down now, let's say it's a Le'Veon Bell contract, or you could pick any player off the top 10 of running backs, it's going to have an impact on David Johnson. It is going to have an impact on the Arizona Cardinals. What Matthew Stafford is getting here does not impact Carson Palmer, because I don't see Carson Palmer here much longer. I just don't. But man, that just adds an extra level. And as Eric said, with Andrew Luck not possibly able to go in week number two, and you have to see Scott Tolzien, or Brock Osweiler, if that deal does come down, if in fact Cleveland does ship him off, it's a whole different dimension. The other NFL stuff today is it's all around Ezekiel Elliott and whether he's going to get his suspension reduced or not. And that only matters really to fantasy football fans and Cowboy fans. And that's about it. And we'll talk to Michael Fabiano on the other side about that. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our football show is tonight. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ. 16 airings this week on Fox Sports Arizona. We appreciate the partnership with them. Before and after the Diamondbacks games against the Dodgers tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday as well. Back with Michael Fabiano in a minute. And now it's time for Michael Fabiano, right there at the NFL Network, NFL.com, Senior Fantasy Analyst, the Hall of Famer, reading right off of Michael's tweets here. If you prefer to get your fantasy news and analysis on Facebook, please like my Facebook page. How about that? I take care of you on this thing. I check your line before we go on the air to make sure I've got it all handled.
You are the best, man. You are the best. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, even Instagram, although I don't really give a lot of fantasy advice on Instagram, just kind of, photos and that kind of stuff. Following me around this past week, I was in New York City, and I was in St. Louis, and 2 weeks before that, I was in Boston, and bouncing around all over the place. But appreciate that, bro.
Do you shut it off? When do you shut this down now? Because fourth preseason game, and I'll ask you this question separately. This week you cannot be getting a whole lot of stuff in terms of who's going to play, who's not going to play out of these games. These games are like the most worthless of worthless. Or maybe I'm wrong on that. But do you just shut it off before week one for a day? Can you take a day and just get away from all this or no?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. I mean, yeah, it's already started.
Burned out.
Oh, thanks. It's August. No, it's one of those things where this is my last weekend, and then I'm done until, January.
Right.
But I'm not complaining, man. I could be doing a lot worse things.
No, I know. But yeah. It's just interesting, your story. So, all right, let's go through this. The mailbag is filled with Julian Edelman, what do I do nows? These are people that had their drafts in the last 6 weeks, and what do they do now?
Well, hold your draft later.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it happened to a lot of people. In fact, I had a draft last week, and I had the pleasure of drafting Spencer Ware and Cam Meredith.
Oh, man.
And Vontaze Burfict, by the way, and he's suspended. But the first thing you instantly do is go and see if you can pick up Chris Hogan, although the distribution there and the targets in New England sort of unpredictable because you've got so many options. They still have a lot of good options there. Malcolm Mitchell could see more targets. Danny Amendola. I don't think Amendola is really rosterable at this point unless you're in a deeper league. I think Hogan is the guy that you go out and pick up. But the fact of the matter here is that this loss, Edelman had 150 targets last season.
Yeah.
But no Rob Gronkowski. Now he's back. You've got Brandon Cooks in the mix. And I think this helps Cooks a little bit. I moved them up maybe one or two spots based on this because there are, you know, this 150 targets now that are going to be distributed around the entire offense. And keep in mind, too, you've got James White who can catch the ball out of the backfield as well. Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, they've got some guys at running back who are pass catchers as well. So it's going to be a distribution that's going to be sort of hard to predict. But on the surface, the guys whose value increases the most as a result of Edelman's injury is going to be Chris Hogan. With that being said, I still wouldn't draft him as more than a 4 or 5.
Okay, and you mentioned Spencer Ware, getting questions about that too.
Well, you know, I've been in on this kid. I thought he was going to end up taking the job from Spencer Ware at some point during the regular season. Didn't expect it to happen this soon. The uptick in his value is ridiculous. So he was a top 40 running back going into the last week of the preseason games here.
Right.
And when Ware went down, all of a sudden, Hunt's a top 15 back. And I was in a draft just a few days ago. 5 rookie running backs went in the top 40.
Wow.
5.
Wow.
That is, I can't remember that ever happening. So if you look back at the running backs who've had success under Andy Reid, you get excited. You know, Jamal Charles, Brian Westbrook, Deuce Staley, LeSean McCoy. And Hunt's in that mold, versatile guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield as long as he keeps himself at least at a good level in terms of being a pass protector. He's going to be on the field a lot for Kansas City. So I'm projecting him right now as a third-round pick, maybe fourth round in some leagues he'll slide into, but his value just shot right through the roof. And I think that's because a lot of people were talking about the fact that even if Ware was healthy, Kareem Hunt was going to impact his value. And now he's got that job basically all to himself.
Talking with Michael Fabiano. To the mailbag, Abdullah's floor and ceiling, Rodgers' floor and ceiling while filling in for Martin.
Well, I do like Abdullah this season. The one thing I don't like is the fact that, well, he's been a bit prone to injuries, and I think his touchdown ceiling is low. He's not a guy who's going to score a lot. The Lions throw the ball a ton. They've also got Theo Riddick, who's a pass-catching running back. And when they get into the red zone, they typically throw it up. So I would say that Abdullah's ceiling is probably in the RB2 tier, and his floor, I think, is the bottom end of the flex starter position. He's a guy who could end up being a pretty good value because he's not going in the top 50 picks in most leagues. And then as for Rodgers, if you look at his numbers last year, I believe there was 5 games where he had 15 or more carries, and he was averaging well over 20 touches a game, and he was putting up about 12 to 13 fantasy points a game. Pretty good. Now Charles Sims is back. He's in the mix there as well. It's probably going to be a bit of a two-headed monster. But Rodgers does have that sort of low RB2 potential in those 3 games while Doug Martin is out due to that suspension. Now, when Martin comes back, I believe Rodgers goes back to the bench and becomes a secondary back in this offense. But for the first 3 games, especially if you're someone who drafted Ezekiel Elliott,
yep,
Rodgers could be very useful.
Getting a lot of questions, and you and I talked about this a few weeks ago just in general terms about McFadden, but getting floor-ceiling questions on mm-hmm. McFadden and what's going on in Dallas from your view. And obviously a lot of it is predicated on what happens here with Zeke today, tomorrow, whenever it comes
yep.
out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, McFadden's an RB2 all day long. The offensive line, the offense itself, if you look at McFadden a few seasons ago, when he ended up being the prominent back in that offense, he rushed for over 1,000 yards and was a very nice RB2 for your fantasy team. Is he Zeke Elliott? No, of course not.
Yeah.
But I do believe he's going to lead that backfield in touches while Zeke is on the sidelines for however many games that is. People are a little bit concerned about Alfred Morris as well, and he'll see some burn, but I think overall it'll be more run DMC. If you do draft Zeke, McFadden's got to be on your radar at some point in the 8th or 9th round in a 10-team league, because if you wait any longer than that, someone else is going to grab him. And, you know, the good thing here is that there's going to be a drop-off because Zeke is an elite player, but it's not going to be so drastic that losing him is going to kill you week in and week out, because McFadden can still give you double-digit fantasy points every single week behind what is one of the better run-blocking offensive lines in the entire league.
To the mailbag for Michael Fabiano, pick two out of the three, Kareem Hunt, Crowder, Robinson.
I would go with Robinson and Kareem Hunt.
Let's talk about the fantasy impact of the Arizona Cardinals now with Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network and NFL.com. As we look ahead to the start of the season, a lot of questions about David Johnson. Is there any question in your mind that he's the number one overall fantasy back and just the overall weapons for Carson Palmer and Palmer too, Michael?
Yep, David Johnson is, with Le'Veon Bell's holdout and Zeke's suspension, I mean, it's a no-brainer. A guy who is targeting 1,000 yards rushing and receiving. Now, that's the kind of guy I want on my fantasy football team. Mm. And DJ's super talented in the mold of a Priest Holmes. And if you remember Priest Holmes, not from his Baltimore days, from his Kansas City days, I mean, he was unbelievable when it came to statistics and fantasy football success. Like Carson Palmer, draftable as a QB2, somewhere late in your draft because, well, supply and demand in quarterbacks are clearly a position that you're going to wait on. You know, Larry Fitzgerald, it was good to see John Brown come back and do well in the last preseason game, and he's clearly draftable. Of course, there's a little bit of risk there with the sickle cell trait, but Larry Fitzgerald, I have him in my top 15 wide receivers in PPR leagues. Despite his age, he is going to get peppered with targets, just peppered. And he's certainly a player who has been an elite fantasy wide receiver in the past. I don't know that he's elite now, but in PPR leagues, people may look past him. Well, he's 33 years old and you know, he's past his prime. He's still a pretty darn good wide receiver, and his statistics from last season will absolutely reflect that. So I actually was able to draft Larry as a 3 in a PPR league in that same draft that I had a couple of days ago, and I couldn't have been happier. But he's certainly in the wide receiver 2 category in PPR leagues and probably going to be a 3 in most standard scoring formats. J.J. Nelson, I believe, is someone who's sort of a wait-and-see. I don't know that he's draftable at this point. He showed some flashes last year, but as long as John Brown is going to be on the field and healthy, I believe he is the second wide receiver that should be targeted off the Cardinals rosters in fantasy. And at tight end, well, I don't have too much to say. But I'm trying to think of the Cardinals typically don't have that statistical tight end on their roster and in their offenses. I was trying to think of like the last really good Cardinals tight end in fantasy. It may be like Freddie Jones.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
yeah, no, that's a good call. It's been a while. What about the special team side? What about the special team side with Phil Dawson and the Cardinal defense? Because I get people that ask me about the fantasy impact of those two, and I know that's not front and center for you, but for those that do play and they're in those leagues, Phil Dawson, Cardinal defense.
Cardinals defense is almost always top 10 in fantasy, so it will be drafted across the board. And as for Phil Dawson, probably a back end number one kicker, top of the K2, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've actually ever gotten a question about Phil Dawson, so that's a first. When you're a kicker behind an offense that's got the potential to put points on the board, he's almost always going to be at least somewhat valuable in fantasy. I mean, did anyone know who Will Lutz was, before the season in 2016? All of a sudden, he's putting up pretty good numbers. Why? Well, he plays in a dome, and he's playing behind the Saints offense. So Phil Dawson is draftable at some point late, just like every kicker should be drafted late. And I was in St. Louis, as I mentioned, this past weekend, and they have the big league impact drafts, and I believe there were 6 drafts going on, and I couldn't believe that Steven Gostkowski got drafted. I believe one draft he was picked in the 7th or 8th round. Please don't do that. please don't do that. Wait until the last 2 rounds. Kickers are really hard to predict most of the time, and typically there's guys that you can pick up off the waiver wire who are going to be just as good or better than the kickers that you actually draft. So I had a little bit of fun with those people.
Before you get out of here, what do you look at this weekend? I mean, you're not going to see starters for the most part. What is it you're looking
much
for?
I'd like to see what some of the backup quarterbacks who potentially could take over jobs like a Deshaun Watson, for example, you know, see what you get from a Mitchell Trubisky, who's almost guaranteed to see some starts. Leonard Fournette, there's been discussions that maybe he's going to play a few series for the Jaguars because he's missed the last couple of games. So he's certainly a player that I'm going to be watching. But to be quite honest with you, at this point, what goes on in preseason week four is going to be much ado about nothing.
Right, right. No, then that's how
I approach it. At least from a fantasy football standpoint.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. You're talking practice squad guys, and people aren't going to do much in fantasy. But
exactly.
But I was interested to get your view on that. Thanks for the time.
I mean, if there are any notable fantasy players that are going to get some burn this Thursday, it's certainly notable to take a look at what they do, but you're going to be playing with backups and against backups, and so it's really hard to gauge.
Good stuff as always, Michael. Appreciate the time and insight. Thanks.
All right, pal. Take care.
Michael Fabiano with us there at the NFL Network. Always good to catch up with Michael. All things fantasy football, we do it every week. Every Tuesday, you shoot on in your questions to us at Sports360AZ out of the mailbag. We choose some, get them on the air, and have some fun with Michael. Talk about other stuff, too. The baseball team, I'm going to circle back on them a little bit more on the college football week that gets started. And we'll do that on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let me go over to the baseball team first, and I'm going to go circle back on some football stuff. Tonight, it's Zach Godley. So Zach Godley here the last few outings has not been the Zach Godley that we saw earlier in the year, and that's the way it goes. It's ebbs and flows. Patrick Corbin wasn't very good earlier this season, if we remember correctly, and I remember sitting here ranting and raving about that. And I want to see more out of him. We'll have Pedro Gomez with us tomorrow, ESPN's baseball analyst and insider in front of the show. So Pedro and I will talk about the Diamondbacks at greater length tomorrow. They lose Nick Ahmed out with a broken wrist. You don't like to see that. However, the team has been able to get by. They have been able to get by, even with all the injuries they've had at shortstop. On the college football front, so if we're looking at college football, we're looking at Arizona State as they start their season later this week, and we're looking at U of A against NAU on Saturday. You look at the two programs within our state. Do we feel optimistic about what is going to happen this coming football season? And I would make the argument that everywhere I go, at least, the answer is no. I was at the Arizona State football kickoff luncheon a couple of weeks back, and I had fans coming up to me saying they just hope they can make a bowl game. Hoping you can just make a bowl game? Really? This is supposedly this big-time power program, and you're just hoping you make it to Las Vegas, or you're hoping you make it to El Paso, or you're hoping you make it to San Diego, second and third tier bowl games. That's not what you should be aspiring to be as a fan to start out the season. You're just hoping for something good to happen. U of A football fan, it's not like they're any great shakes either. You talk about the U of A and what they're trying to get accomplished this season. They're already looking forward to basketball. They're talking more about Raleigh Alkins and talking about Sean Miller's program than they are on their football field, even though I think Brandon Dawkins is going to be pretty good. So the point is, on all of this, between the U of A and where they are with football versus basketball, and Arizona State, where they are just in a program that has got a new stadium that they're talking about, but on the field, since Todd Graham beat Notre Dame a couple of years ago, they are below 500 against Power 5 teams. The numbers don't lie. So as we come into the start of this season, am I supposed to feel like everything is great at ASU? I don't know. You cannot turn around a secondary overnight. Doesn't matter what happens against New Mexico State on Thursday night. Doesn't matter. It may well be a shootout because the secondary for ASU, I don't see it being great shakes better, and it was below 100th in the nation last year. Do they really have a quarterback, or do they have just two nice quarterbacks in Manny Wilkins and Blake Barnett? I really don't know, and nobody can know. Nobody can say, oh, yeah, they got it all figured out. No, sometimes when you have two, it means you have none. Bounce back over to Tucson. Okay, Brandon Dawkins at quarterback's pretty darn good. I like what Brandon Dawkins did last season at Arizona. Rich Rod's been messing around with all these different quarterbacks and different looks, but I don't know. I think Brandon Dawkins is the guy there, and they've got a pretty good running attack. I think the U of A, what they did to ASU at the end of last season, where they kicked ASU all over the field. It was an embarrassment what happened to the Sun Devils last year. And for the Wildcats, it was a great night on a day where it was a great night for a season that had been just dreadful for them. It had been just dreadful for them up until that point. So they ended it on a high note by taking their arch rival and kicking them to the curb like it was nobody's business. I'm looking at both these programs saying I'm expecting a coaching change at the end of the year, to be quite honest with you. I hope I'm wrong. They're both nice guys, okay? I like Rich Rodriguez personally. I like Todd Graham personally. But facts are facts. Both of the programs in this state are at the bottom part of the Pac-12 South as we start the year out. Both of these programs haven't been able to keep top-flight kids in state. I don't know. Look up at Washington. Byron Murphy was the player of the year in the state a couple of years ago. He's starting in the secondary for the Huskies and is on the fast track to the next level. You cannot let players that talented get away. So as I'm opening up the season and I'm opening up the show with this, I'm looking at both programs saying, I just don't feel like this is going to be a year to get too excited about. Now, there's some other college football. We have Alabama and Florida State. Eric, do you like Florida State in this one? Do you feel as though there's a big upset coming along in this one to start out the year? Nick Saban's going to be 0-1?
I don't know if I like them, but I wouldn't call it a big upset if Florida State beat Alabama.
Really?
No. Florida State's the third-ranked team in the country. Florida State has just as many athletes as Alabama does. Are they a better football team than Alabama? I don't know.
How about Michigan-Florida?
I don't really have a good read on this game. Florida is really Jekyll and Hyde. Florida is
Florida has three quarterbacks.
Well, Florida is the annual SEC title game whipping boy to Alabama, but they get to the title game every year. And I don't watch a lot of Florida just because I just don't.
Okay, does Harbaugh still interest you?
Yes. Did you see his latest stunt?
No. What did he do?
He's not going to name a starting quarterback at Michigan.
Of course he's not.
He's not. He's just not going to. Because I guess Florida isn't really – or no, I apologize. Florida isn't naming their starting quarterback.
Yes.
So Harbaugh is not only not naming his, but he's not even putting out a depth chart.
Because Luke Del Rio's down there.
Yep.
The transfer from Notre
Dame. Malik Zaire.
Yeah. Malik Zaire should have probably gone to Texas, right? If you look at it, if he's in a quarterback battle at Florida.
Yeah, but I mean,
if he's in a quarterback battle at Florida.
Shane Buechele's at Texas, and he's a good young quarterback.
Is he a big game changer? Wasn't Texas in the market looking for transfer quarterbacks here in the offseason?
They were, but right? That's Tom Herman trying to stir the drink.
If you're looking for transfer quarterbacks, what does that tell you about your program? You missed.
Yeah.
Right? UCLA is not looking for a transfer quarterback. Nope. USC is not looking for a transfer quarterback. Nope. If you're looking for transfer quarterbacks, it means you missed. And so Todd Graham missed. Somewhere along the way, Todd Graham missed.
Did he?
Well, if you have to go get a quarterback from Palomar College by way of Alabama, did he miss?
But that just wasn't a quarterback we thought. That was the number one rated 2015 quarterback in the nation.
But you know how I am about ratings. You know how I am about rankings and stars and all that nonsense.
If you have a chance to get a Mercedes, get the Mercedes.
If you have Sam Darnold and you have Josh Rosen, do you need to go get the Mercedes? No.
No, but that's the exception to the rule. I bet you could make a case. There's a lot more colleges looking for quarterbacks than have quarterbacks.
Why is it that you have to go get a supposed big time quarterback? You've got to go fill a hole. You have to fill a need. Why is it they can't go find a top flight safety or corner? Like, I'm expecting this year to not be much prettier on the defensive side of the football for ASU.
Did you see Kareem Moore had an interception last weekend for Tennessee Chattanooga?
Oof.
His first game, he had an interception.
Oof.
One of the few experienced secondary players that was supposed to be back for ASU.
I wrote something today about Graham not being back.
I saw it. I haven't read it, but I saw it.
He's coaching for his job.
Of course.
Would we agree with
that?
That's not breaking news.
I think he would agree he's coaching for his job.
Yeah, it's not breaking news. All right. So the baseball game is tonight. We're a couple days away now from the start of the college football season, which is what we really care about before we get to the NFL a week from Sunday. We just don't care about what's going on in Denver on Thursday night. We don't. That is our show for today. Thanks for being with us and having some fun with us. We're here every Monday through Friday. We do our thing live at 10 a.m. Our television show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. And those of you on AZ Central, we're here every day. Good partnership there with AZ Central. Appreciate them being with us. Things that are local around the great state of Arizona. And then over on our website, you can check out our content at sports360az.com. Have a great day. Thanks for checking out this podcast on sports360az.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.